You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Dan Baer's interview with the writer, director, and star of the film Musica, Rudy Mancuso.
Rudy, are you even listening to me? Hello? I think you can do anything. I think you could do that, but I also think that maybe there's a world where you put all of this creativity just towards a stable job or something more consistent with actual money.
Sorry, what?
I'm Rudy.
Isabella.
Isabella, prazer.
Prazer.
Mom?
What?
Welcome everyone to the Next Best Picture podcast, where we are talking with Rudy Mancuso, the writer, director, and star of the new film Musica. Rudy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Very excited to be speaking to you today. This was one of my favorite films that premiered at South by Southwest that just happened. And I've also been a fan of the Awkward Puppet Show on YouTube for years that you started on years ago. And before doing that, you were making content on Vine, if I recall correctly. So I'm curious when the idea for a feature film came about for you and what made it this particular film.
Yeah, the inception of the idea for Musica, I think, arrived before any of the things you just mentioned. I think before a professional career in creating, in making short videos and directing music videos. The goal was always make a film and make it as personal a film as possible that explored synesthesia, that explored Brazilian culture. When, where, how, I didn't know how to answer those questions, but I knew that that was the long-term goal. And I got lucky enough to have a career creating. And I knew that all those things you just mentioned, from Vine to YouTube, to Awkward Puppets, to directing music videos, to composing for TV, were all an avenue to arriving at Musica, which was the feature of my dreams, the first feature of my dreams.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really loved reading in the production notes for this is that you cited Charlie Chaplin as an influence because of how he did everything in stories that he knew that he could tell with his skill set. And I'm curious, when were you first introduced to Charlie Chaplin and how did that affect your work going forward?
I mean, as early as like middle school, we would watch clips of early Chaplin. I remember watching The Kid and The Immigrant. He's actually right here, by the way. He's with us today.
Oh, I love that tattoo. That's great.
And I remember reading about how he really was a one human band. And not only would he lead his films as an actor and performer, but he would direct them. He would compose the score. He would physically edit them. He would cut the film himself in the cutting room. He would choreograph the dance sequences and the stunts. And that was the first time I'd heard of somebody being this really all-encompassing creator. And as somebody who also dreamed of doing all those things and not knowing if it was possible, Chaplin's early work was a reminder that it was. So I always looked up to him more than anything for his ability to wear so many hats. It is possible to do all those things. And it's possible to do all those things well.
Absolutely it is. And his work is, he's one of my favorite filmmakers. So I loved reading that about you. Musica is really about synesthesia, but you never name it in the film. Was that intentional and why or why not?
Yeah, I wanted to explain the experience and the perspective as little as possible. It was more of like I would have rather shown and not told, aside from the scene where Rudy's sitting with Isabella and he attempts to explain to her in the park, this is kind of how I see the world, and she accepts him for it. I at no point wanted to give it a name. You know, this isn't a film about somebody who's describing their symptoms in a in a clinical or medical way. It's more so about seeing it. It's seeing the perspective unfold in real time. And if he does explain it as subtly and little as possible, because at the time, I didn't know that there was a name for it. The time that I was having these experiences growing up, I didn't know that what synesthesia was. I didn't know that this was a neurological condition that a lot of people have, and there's a lot of research about. So it only felt more authentic for the Rudy in this film to not know about it either.
That makes sense. You talk about that scene in the park with Isabella, which is so vibrant, and all of the music sequences in the film, I think, are really vibrant and joyous sort of explosions of music instead of just, you know, music being played. Did you have all of those sequences like really mapped out in your head before going into filming? Like, is what we see exactly what was in your mind when you were writing this movie?
Hell yeah, it was. I wrote the music and conceived the musical set pieces before the script was even finished. We actually wrote the script and worked the story around those set pieces. I already knew the book. I already knew how I wanted to be. I'm an editor, so I knew how I wanted them to be cut, which was massively helpful by the time we were there on the day shooting.
So all the musical sequences came first before even the story.
Yeah,
I knew. Wow.
In fact, the music for the park and for the opening diner scene and the fish market were recorded. We had demos of all that stuff before we even got greenlit to make a film.
I love that. As a former dancer and choreographer, I especially love that.
It's so helpful to anyone we sent the script to. We also had a short to show them, which was like a makeshift version of the opening diner scene, and a bunch of music to show them. So the vision was very locked by then.
I was going to ask what the journey to financing was like for this project, you know, being that it's your first feature, and there's a lot about it that is very unexpected and fresh in terms of the point of view and how you go about telling the story. So what were the reaction from people like?
Well, yeah, I suppose the advantage that I had that a lot of first-time filmmakers maybe don't is having a following with an array of hundreds of videos that I culminated over many years, where I auditioned a lot of the ideas that ended up being reimagined for the film. Everything from the oneer to the treating items and miscellaneous objects as instruments. There's a version of almost every set piece in Musica that exists on my YouTube, my social, or my shorts repertoire. So when I was in the room pitching the story, I had so much to pull from. I had so much to show. On top of that, I shot a short that was essentially a poor man's version of the opening scene in the diner. This is like almost five years ago now. And when we went to market, I would show that clip. And I'd say, this represents a version of the opening scene. And it's almost shot for shot what ended up being in the film. Obviously, the film it's a bit bigger. It's a bit more elaborate and elevated, but it's pretty damn close. And I think that gave the studio confidence in me as a filmmaker. And also, like, every idea I had that might have seemed a little bit crazy or out there, I could defend and justify because of all this stuff that I had auditioned on the internet years prior. So yeah, I met Dan Lagana, became my co-writer, who I fell in love with his style, and he helped guide me through writing a feature script and structuring a feature screenplay, because I'd never done it. Him, myself, Wonderland, Mary Viola at Wonderland, we went into Amazon with this package and they loved it, and the rest is history.
Very, very cool. And I'm glad that you brought up that oneer, because that was definitely the moment in the film that made my jaw drop once I realized what was happening. Because it's not just a oneer for the sake of a oneer. We're following Rudy as he systematically lies to all the women in his life and the connecting thread between that. So I'm assuming that you always envisioned it as one take.
Yeah.
How it was going to look. Yeah. So how much time did you spend planning, rehearsing, and shooting that scene?
Not enough, but I thank
by a fantastic DP, Shane Hurlbut, and production designer Patrick Sullivan for helping conceive this schematic and geography on how to pull it off. I mean, you know, there's never quite enough time or money or resources to pull these grander ideas off. But we fought and fought and fought and fought and finally found a way to make it work on a stage. It was essential to me, this oneer, not for the sake of being a oneer, but the nature of trying to pull off a 5-minute long duration take with movable sets being assembled and disassembled in real time, and the geography of the camera, you know, tracking Rudy from behind, then rotating 90 degrees, and then retracing the step backwards, then rotating 180 degrees, and then finally landing back where we start. It's chaotic and it's difficult and it's challenging and it's thrilling. And the whole cast crew is in it together. And that was very reflective of what Rudy, the character, was experiencing in that film, was trying to balance and control the chaos of his life. So the frantic nature of a oneer was very much emulating what Rudy as the character was experiencing. So it made so much sense to me. And it also lends itself to the style and tone of the film, where sometimes we do take these musical and theatrical leaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it took about half a day rehearsing and half a day to shoot. And no one took, wow. Everyone told me it wouldn't be possible. And they said, it's going to end up on the cutting room floor. You better cover your ass, get another, you know, cover it in a few different angles, or plan for a reshoot. None of that happened.
To all of our listeners of the Next Best Picture podcast, we know you love movies. We do too. Do you like going to the theater? Well, Regal Unlimited just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just 2 visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets, you'll also save on snacks. Members get 10% off on all non-alcoholic concession items. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, just 2, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/limited. And you can tell them Next Best Picture sent you with the promo code /RegalNBP24. That's /RegalNBP24.
How many takes did you do before you were satisfied?
I think it was 14 takes all in all.
Wow. And did you end up using the last one, the 14th?
No. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was like the 10th or 11th. There was a take I really loved that I believe was take 7. But then there were just a couple of beats and cues that landed better in a later take. But it wasn't the last take. Yeah.
That's always cool how those things worked out and how you feel like what you feel and what you see on set can sometimes be changed when you see the final product. It's very cool how that happens.
Yeah, more times than none, I'm either using the very first take or the very last.
You know, I have to say, because I love my mother, and she is an excellent actress. I cannot imagine casting her in my feature film debut and what that dynamic would be like. So why? why put yourself through that?
Yeah, well, quite simply because she was the only person that could play herself and represent what my mother meant to me growing up in as authentic a way as possible in the world. So it's challenging, obviously, working with your mother. It's a triggering, anxiety inducing, pain in the ass, also so much fun, because my mom is very funny and very energetic, the reason why I am the way I am and do what I do. So what a dream to be able to cast my actual mother to play my mother. That was always the goal. If I was told for some reason that wasn't possible, I wouldn't have had that character in the film, because no one could really fill those shoes. She has a unique ability to be herself unapologetically on and off camera. So I needed to use that. I needed to.
How did you navigate that dynamic on set?
Well, to be honest, I had a conversation with my DP earlier on, and not just for my mother, but for for pretty much every character where there's any A and B dialogue exchange, I want it to cross shoot so that we can improv and we can capture the nuances of the performances. With my mom, we even had three cameras a lot of times, two overs and one two shot rolling at all times. I noticed that with my mom, it was less about, you know, let's rehearse the scene, let's try and nail the lines and get a performance. She couldn't really remember the lines. She doesn't really understand film shooting. So I ignored the pages completely and I told her to ignore the pages. And we just had a conversation. I would steer it to hit certain beats. So a lot of what you're seeing is just real natural back and forth between my mother and I.
Well, and it feels real natural. You can feel the dynamic between you, and also like, your mother is wonderfully charismatic, and like you said, like just so unapologetically herself. She's a joy to watch, and I can only imagine what that must have been like for you on set.
Yeah, it was a challenge, but ultimately very rewarding.
I can imagine, and then it paid off. You know, the other thing that paid off, I think, for the movie is shooting on location in the Ironbound neighborhood of Newark, New Jersey. And that's where you grew up, right?
Yeah, I lived in Glen Ridge, New Jersey, which is 10, 15 minutes from Newark. But we spend like almost all of our time in Newark. That's where our family friends were. That's where my mother would do her shopping. And aside from sleeping, that's where we spend all of our time. So it was, and the reason was because it's this tight-knit Brazilian neighborhood. It was super diverse, but it was primarily Brazilian and Portuguese. So my mother felt really at home, really welcomed, as did I. I can't say the same for other towns in New Jersey. So we're able to shoot there in the actual streets that I would walk growing up my entire life. We shot in the actual fish market that we'd buy fish growing up. We shot in my mom's actual home, where my childhood home where I grew up, which not a lot of filmmakers have the opportunity to do.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And you know, especially that scene in the park that we were talking about earlier with Isabella, it really does feel like you just like happened upon music that was just happening in the park. It has a real communal feel to it. And I'm wondering, like, did you, when you were shooting, did the community like get involved in any way? Were there like lots of onlookers, or like did you look at local musicians at all?
Yeah, both. There were tons of local folk who ended up being a part of the film in some way. They would offer their stores and in cafes as locations or catering. There are a lot of our rhythm performers were Newark or New York locals, a lot of which happened to be Brazilian as well. The park was an ambitious one to tackle because it was such a pivotal moment between Rudy and Isabella for a story, while also being a very complex musical set piece. It was our first day of shooting, our first 2 days of shooting with the park.
Wow, that's a one to shoot for the first day.
Yeah, no, it's an ambitious first 2 days, but it also was really helpful. It kind of set the tone for the rest of the shoot. And we started with such a complex piece, so it educated the whole crew on how we were doing the music in this thing, because it's one thing to see it on paper or hear about it, another thing to actualize it. We recorded all of our sounds live, and that's a very unconventional thing to do.
Again, it paid off. Yeah, it looks and sounds great. As someone whose career has really grown with the internet, starting with Vine and then going through all these other things, how do you see the internet as a kind of talent incubator and outlet for creative expression?
Well, for me, I attribute all of this to success on the internet. It was where I was able to, with no parameters, tell any story I wanted to tell. And it's one of the only places where you can do that. And you don't need much. If you have a phone, you can tell pretty much any story you want to tell. I learned the language of making videos in 6 seconds that eventually turned into 15, then a minute, and then 5 minutes, then music videos, then TV. It was a natural evolution and progression. And it's all spearheaded by creating on the internet. It was a tool, it was a free tool. And I was able to make any song I wanted to, tell any story I wanted, and play any character with no one telling me how, why, or when. It's the only place where you can do that. And had it not been for countless ideas that I auditioned on the internet, I probably wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to make this movie.
I really like that phrase that you use. Like, you keep saying you auditioned these pieces on the internet. Yeah, it's a really great way to describe it.
Everything I've done on the internet has been auditioned for this movie.
I think all that experience and practice that you got, it really shows. The movie is insanely ambitious first feature, and you pulled it off in something really entertaining and unique. So thank you for the movie.
Thank you for the kind words.
Of course, and thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to whatever you have coming next.
Yeah, we'll be sitting here on the next one for sure, talking about more things that I did that caused anxiety.
I look forward to it. Rudy, thanks so much again.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dan.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Dan Baer's interview with the writer, director, and star of the new film Musica, Rudy Mancuso, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Musica is now currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
Hello, this is Gary Chachot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.